M on the right hand side under Community Events.
It's hard to think this great man is dead.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my pleasure to have in the studio some younger people from the Portland African American Leadership Forum. And we are going to be talking today about a development that's taking place with Majestic Realty and PDC. I want to first take a few moments to tell you who's in the studio with me. I have in the studio Rachel Gilmer. She's the director of Portland African American Leadership Forum, Leadership Academy. In this role, she supports the personal and professional development of emerging African American leaders in the community. Prior to joining the staff at PALF, Rachel was the Regional Equity Coordinator, Coalition Coordinator for the Oregon Health Authority Office of Equity Inclusion. Well, that's a mouthful. I bet you didn't say that too often in one fell swoop. In this position, Rachel worked with culturally diverse community-based coalitions to support them in advancing community needs and health equity through policy and program development. Welcome to the studio, Rachel. It's a pleasure for me to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And next, I want to introduce Serena Boston Ashby. Serena Boston Ashby is director of the Portland African American Leadership Forum and last worked as the deputy director of economic and business equity for Governor John Kitzhaber. Her political career began in 2005 as Oregon's constituency director for the Democratic National Committee. In 2008 and 2009, she ran for the Oregon House of Representatives. She worked as Oregon campaign deputy for President Barack Obama and as a field representative for U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. She has served on many nonprofit boards, including Portland State Center for Women, Politics and Policy in the Urban League of Portland. Next in the studio, welcome to the studio, Serena Boston Ashby.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And you may hear a little Googling in the background, and no, it's not me going back to my childhood, but we have a very young guest as well in the studio today. And she may want to weigh in later. Also, we have in the studio Steve Gilliam. Steve Gilliam Jr. holds a BS in Business Administration from Florida A&M University, originally from Boston, Massachusetts. He eventually graduated high school from Punahou School in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Good job.
Steven is a veteran, having served in South Korea as a member of the U.S. Army from 2003 and 2005. Since moving to Portland in 2008, Steven has been active in many organizations, including the Urban League of Portland, Tax Fairness Oregon, U.S. Uncut, the Oregon Bus Project, and the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, where he serves as treasurer. As treasurer of Multnomah County Young Democrats, see, you are young, he played a key role in the formation of the Young Democrats of Oregon, where he later served as vice president. Currently, Stephen is fighting to stop the destruction of black communities as a member of PALF's African American Leadership Academy. And last but not least, we're going to welcome to the studio Maxine, I got to pull up you.
Fitzpatrick.
Maxine Fitzpatrick, and I'm going to pull up her resume in just a sec. And first, let me just welcome everyone to the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Let me do a brief bio for Maxine Fitzpatrick, who is the executive director of... Ms. Fitzpatrick has nearly 30 years of development of affordable housing. She is recognized as a national leader in the field and has been PCRI's executive director since 1993. Under her direction, the The houses in PCRI's initial 272-unit rental portfolio has been rehabilitated, and the portfolio has been expanded to over 700 units. Ms. Fitzpatrick is actively involved in the community and serves as co-chair of the Portland African American Leadership Forum, is a Multnomah County citizen representative on the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, and has served on countless boards and committees throughout the city of Portland. I want to welcome you all to the studio today. It is so wonderful to have you here. And so now that our listening audience knows who's in the house, let's just jump in. First, let's tell folks, what is PALF?
Well, PALF is the Portland African American Leadership Forum, and essentially it's a network of African American leaders who are committed to a unified action agenda to move forward and support the African American community and locally. Historically, we've operated on a collective model where at times we've convened African American organizations around issues of critical concern, namely the one that I think we'll have a chance to talk about today. But for the most part, our interest is taking a hard look at the historical disparities that have really troubled our community and to come together around innovative ways to really solve those issues, whether it's, very relevant data and research or looking at innovative models of organizing. Essentially, that's just the way that we kind of operate. I think also one of the things that I would say about the Portland African American Leadership Forum is that we really work in solidarity with other organizations that have been around, and so we really view partnership as being at the heart of what we do, as well as transparency to the community. We're one of about five other forums throughout the country. We were established here in late 2009, early 2010, based on a model that was created in the Twin Cities, where the African American community there had found themselves, as they kind of tell their story, in a place that they hadn't been at in history before, where they had leaders at, you know, different sectors and posts and decision-making roles all at the same time. And so they decided to really bring the community together to really leverage that position of power, but to also look at ways that they hadn't worked collectively before and solve those issues. And so that concept came out here, and so we were able to adapt it around our historical framework. So I've been director for about 2 years. It'll be 2 years in February. And we operate with a steering committee that is comprised of leaders who have been established in this community that have individual expertise or passion around specific issues. And then we have four policy subgroups that really focus in on our activities in terms of public action or public policy. Our issues have tended to focus in around education, health, housing, economic development, and then also around civic engagement and leadership. So our big programmatic feature, which is what Rachel directs, is our African American Leadership Academy. So all of our meetings are open to the public, and we always have an open door policy, and we meet every single month. So,
And is there a certain day and time you meet every month?
We meet the last Saturday of every month, the steering committee does, at 10 a.m. at SEI. And as I said, we have an open door policy. Since we've been around, I think really for the better part of going into the fourth year, we've actually taken the opportunity to take a step back and really look at our body of work for the last few years and to do an organizational model process. So we're actually thinking a bit more deeply about how to more, I think, intricately align our work in a formal way. And so that's an exciting process. And so it's been, I think, a great time to work in the community and also build a new model for how we engage the community. And I think that the future is very bright around that type of conversation here in Portland.
I also think it's a wonderful model to bring, I was going to say seniors, but that's not the right term because that's me. But people who've been around for a while in the community, and then young people who are just kind of either at the beginning of their careers or actually really starting to get into a community-based understanding of what's going on in the local community. And so today we wanted to spend some time talking about one of your subcommittees, which I'm the Economic Development Subcommittee, has done some fabulous work recently. And who would want to kind of help us frame that? Rachel?
I'll provide a little bit of context about how we got to where we are now. So last year we launched the African American Leadership Academy, which is a training program that creates a pipeline for young people to take on community posts and, you know, larger leadership opportunities. and just generally sort of support their vision for the community. So they meet monthly for trainings, they're matched to a mentor, and then they also have the opportunity to work on a project. So the young people in our first cohort got together and were really brainstorming what different issues the community was facing. And they decided that gentrification was sort of the biggest issue that they wanted to tackle in their time together. So they came together and put together several different projects focused on attacking the issue of gentrification, both sort of programmatic projects that would focus on how we create community connectivity in the wake of gentrification, but then also how do we attack this from a policy perspective so that we aren't continuing to face displacement as the Black community has faced here in Portland since our arrival. And so they wanted to put together a policy paper that would look critically at systems in Portland and how they lead to displacement. So they were working on those projects, and then our steering committee thought, hey, this is young people taking on the issue of gentrification. We want to support them, and we want this to be a big initiative that comes from the entire Black community. So we decided to take it on as a whole. And then about last October, Avell Gordley contacted us because she had... former senator, because she had read in the Portland Tribune that the Mayor Hales, had said that he wanted to focus on the upside of gentrification. So she had contacted his office and said, you know, this is an unacceptable comment. And Gail Shibley said, you know, I'd really like, maybe he needs some education around the issue. And so we decided to do a tour with the mayor of North Portland to look at the history of gentrification and how it's affected the community. And in that meeting, we asked for the mayor to, because we were still sort of working on this policy paper, and we really wanted to go to the community and ask what the community wanted. Right. We hadn't yet had time to come up with a list of asks or requests for the mayor. So we just asked for more process-oriented asks. So for instance, we asked for him to take on helping us get public records from the city, because that had been a challenge in the past, getting information that was accurate or getting information that was timely. And then secondly, we asked to be involved in any major, you know, structural changes within the PDC or any development decisions that they were going to make in North and Northeast Portland. And then, you know, also letting them know that we would come back in a few months once we'd gathered the community and finished this report with more, you know, policy-oriented asks. Right. And so then, you know, about a month after that meeting in November, we saw the article in the Oregonian about the Majestic Realty deal. And it felt, you know... real shocking, because we had just met with the mayor and he had really committed to engaging us. And so that's when we decided to send the open letter. And so it was really organized by a coalition of both our young leaders and our established leaders as well. And I think that's what's really been able to allow us to build power.
Wonderful. And that was a very powerful letter. And I know that it was sent around as a petition for people to sign on to. So it was sent to the PDC director and the mayor. Have you received any response from either?
So at the gentrification tour, you know, at the end when we were able to present our asks, you know, Patrick Quinton also participated in the tour, as well as a senior staff from the PDC. And so we were able to give that ask both to the mayor as well as you know, Mr. Quinton. And so that letter, of course, was addressed to both of them. And so to date, we did receive a letter from Patrick Quinton to the Portland African American Leadership Forum. And the mayor's seal and signature is actually on that letter, but we've also asked for his own independent individual response, and we have not received that yet. So we do have one response for the record, but we do not have another.
And was the response you received adequate?
No.
Maxine, tell us more.
No, it wasn't adequate. It was basically a laundry list of programs that the PDC and or the city has put in place that they, you know, deem as helping minorities or helping fight gentrification. But really, you know,
like what?
Well, it was like, oh, we give a 30% set aside to affordable housing. Well, that set aside is a mandated set aside.
Right.
And, you know, I think the big problem with that letter is no matter what the PDC says, they're the primary developer of North and Northeast Portland.
That's right.
And they have been proven to gentrify the area. So whatever programs and policies they have in place have proven to be insufficient. But they don't want to look at their own actions and examine what they're doing and say, what do we need to stop? They're trying to say, we would like to continue business as usual, and what will help quell enough public resistance to say that, oh, we are trying. And that's not really acceptable to our community, because we have to live with the consequences, the negative consequences of development in Northeast Portland.
Well, and let's let people know, because all of us have been immersed in this, but I don't think the general public knows what's wrong with the deal that PDC worked out with Majestic Realty, and why is that causing community uproar?
Well, if we could just step back one moment to tagline on what Stephen just said.
Sure, Maxine.
The problem was in 2000 when they created the URA, it was forecasted that gentrification was going to occur. They made a number of commitments to the community because it required a public process.
Right.
And so in this public process, in order to convince the community who were just really frightened to death that they would be displaced, they made a number of commitments in terms of how they were going to prevent that from happening.
Right.
And so with that buy-in, with that commitment from the PDC, the community
said okay. When
it said okay. And so now we are looking at the commitments that are currently being made. Those are the same ones that were made in 2000, 2001, and 2002.
Right.
So they're no different. And so now it's like a recommitment to something that they had already committed to and failed to do.
Right. And so because the leadership the funding for PDC is now controlled by the city council, right?
Yes.
So I know you've written PDC directive, you've written to the mayor, but since the entire city council is responsible for their budget, is there any strategy about talking to other city council members? Before we even go there, let me just ask this question. Is it too late to stop this Majestic deal as the PDC has proposed?
Absolutely not. They are in negotiations right now. Trying to work out a developer's agreement. The deal is not expected to close until July 1st, so there's plenty of time to modify this deal.
Right.
And going back to your earlier question about what specifically is wrong with the deal, well, the city of Portland originally bought the land for around $2 million, and they've been sitting on it, trying to control what development is going to be, what grows there. And now that they decided that they found a real estate company that they would like to work with, they're giving the land away for $500,000 approximately. The land, they have an assessment of $2.9 million on the value of that land. Private assessments have been higher, some as high as $4 million. Also, the land is zoned for mixed-use residential commercial. So they can build up to four floors. But the Trader Joe's project only has one floor in Trader Joe's, and that's it. So here they have a prime opportunity to provide low-income housing above the Trader Joe's, just like they have along the whole MLK corridor in Williams and Vancouver. And they're saying, you know what, there's an opportunity to stabilize displacement. There's an opportunity to have some low-income people living in this place that provides food for people, and they chose to not do it. And not only did they choose to not do it, but they gave a subsidy to a company to not do it specifically.
Right. And let's talk about, you talked about low-income housing. Any idea what the average rents are in Northeast Portland nowadays?
Oh, my goodness. The average rents in Northeast Portland, we were just looking at some data yesterday, in the Concordia neighborhood, the average home value is in excess of $330,000. That's just, if you want to buy a house, that's how much you have to be able to afford.
Right.
And rents have really skyrocketed. I would say that the average rent for like a single family home that PCRI rents is probably like $2,000. That's the very home that we can rent for $750, $800, you know, in that way. And then we also, in addition to that, house a lot of households with Section 8 vouchers.
Right.
So that family can afford to stay in the community and rent a decent place.
Right.
So it's just skyrocketed. And so many, but versus rent, renting in Northeast Portland is becoming like a really premium because the homes are being sold. And so.
Well, and that was like my point, because I see lots of brand new fancy apartment complexes going up in Northeast Portland, but most of them start at, I thought they were starting at somewhere between like $1,600 or $2,000 a month for one bedroom. And it's like, who can afford that, right? It's certainly not the people who have lived in Northeast Portland for the last 20, 30 years.
Right.
And I also think, you know, outside of that is looking at the rental policies that those places may hold. And so, you know, if folks can't necessarily be in the neighborhood, are they going to be given the same access and the same rental application process as everyone else?
Right.
Or do these developers or folks that are managing those properties have an ideal candidate in terms of who they want to be renting and living in that building, which is another conversation that gets in, obviously, into housing discrimination, which the city has had difficulty managing, has been a bad actor in terms of the way that they've tracked that issue. And so not only is affordability a problem, you know, access to an application and a fair application process, that's also something that is, you know, continues to exacerbate the situation.
Right. If you're just joining us, I am talking to representatives from the Portland African American Leadership Forum, and we're talking about the deal cut by Portland Development Commission with Majestic Realty for a piece of land in Northeast Portland for a grocery store. And let me just say that I live in what they call a food desert. Mm-hmm. I live in East Portland. We would be happy to give a developer $1 million to put a grocery store in a place that's convenient and accessible, and we would find that a good investment. It doesn't appear that Northeast Portland is suffering that same kind of food desert mentality that we suffer in East Portland. So, and I understand that that's one of the reasons that they are given a subsidy, is that they're considering this a food desert. Am I accurate in that?
Yeah, you are accurate. And you know, they actually abandoned that line of justification almost immediately because we called them on
because
it.
Because the public, like, okay,
because
good.
We called them on it. And I think it alludes to just a larger problem of top-down development and rather than community-controlled development.
Yes.
So they pick these projects that they'd like to have. They pick the people that they'd like to work with. And then they make justifications wherever they can. And so I think that was a good illustration of that.
So if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Hello, Brian. Welcome to K-Boo. Thank you for your patience. Hello? Hello, hello. Okay, I think we may have lost Brian, but Brian, please give us a call back. The number to call, 503-231-8187. So you got a letter back from PDC that basically said, we promise that we're going to do better in the future.
Starting now.
Starting now. Starting today, we promise we're going to do better. And so what is the next step for PALF?
I think the next step for PALF, and we're really fortunate to have young people like Stephen and Rachel and Serena at the helm of this initiative.
Yes.
I think the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to hold steadfast to making sure that what has happened historically in the city of Portland in terms of how African Americans are just displaced on a routine, right. You know, anytime.
Every 20 years, right?
Every 20 years. And so it's just devastated the community, and the impact of it on individuals and on families, it just really makes you sick. You know, there's no way that we can accurately measure the impact of this continuous displacement on people. They never think about it, but it is a real issue. I know from my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to just move forward and require that the city honor its commitments to the community, which is something I don't think has ever really happened before.
I believe that's absolutely true. We're going to go to the phone line. We have a caller. Hello, Brian. Welcome to K-Boo. Good morning.
Hello.
Oh, poor Brian. He's having a day with that phone. Hopefully, we will get this. We'll get this straight. No worries. Brian will call us back. Give us a call back, Brian. We're here, honest. We're just having some phone difficulties, it does appear. There have been many community efforts in the past to try to hold PDC and the city of Portland accountable for developments as they impact communities with no power. And we, you know, we live in this progressive, so we're told, right, Portland is this melting pot of progressiveness. So why is it so hard to get policymakers to keep their commitments to communities after, you know, after we've worked out the deal, the urban renewal agreement, you said that there were some very specifics that were supposed to be met. Why is it that we end up back here again and again and again?
I think it's mainly because the community has not ever, since I've been here, come together around an initiative like this, and particularly around housing, except for with the creation of Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives. Remember when the landlord was in, the investor broker purchased all those homes and was actually frauding low-income, primarily African-Americans. And so they came together for that. And so I think that this is even a bigger issue because it doesn't just involve like one neighborhood. It involves the the entire city and the population.
And I think there are many people that don't know that it was the African-American community that came together to create the Albina Community Plan long before there were any public resources being invested in Northeast Portland. And it was the African American community that demanded elected officials take responsibilities on a variety of issues within Northeast Portland. And so I'm just old enough to have been around over and over and over again when these conversations have been happening at policy levels with serious commitments from elected officials that just disappear.
I think one of the main reasons that we're having that problem is because there is no oversight after the commitments are made. It should be timely monitoring, and it should be definite, definite goals so that when we go back in 6 months, these are the goals that were outlined. And so now it's very different with the young people now, the way they are working, and they're actually doing all of the legwork. And we as senior and advisors, to them can, use their energy our wisdom and knowledge and experience to move it along. So I think that's
this major. Is why I think this is such an awesome effort, because I think you're absolutely right, Maxine. This is the first time that I've seen an effort that utilize such a wide variety of talent in the African American community. From, as you said, as people have been around a long time, young people fresh out of school, even those that are still in school, because they get injustice as well. The phone lines have definitely filled up since we've started talking, so let's jump to the phone line. Hello, LJ. Welcome to K-Boo. Good morning.
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
I am fabulous. How about you?
Just another day in paradise. All right, Joanne, I'm listening to the show, and I'm listening to the young folks. Thank God that they're getting active. But you and I go back to a time when North and Northeast Portland was redlined.
Yes.
There wasn't any money for development. There wasn't any money to be loaned for housing, yada, 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 yada. And now that all of the undesirables live in Beaverton and Gresham, all of a sudden money magically appears.
Yes.
And now we have development. And this is just sticking in my craw, Joanne. I don't understand what makes... a German company like Trader Joe's, whose headquarters happen to be in Germany, more desirable than Afro-American businesses that at one time were in North and Northeast Portland, There were taverns and I remember Geneva's and the barbershops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that this is that this is like a sort of an insult, because now that the neighborhood has been gentrified, now we can put an upscale specialty supermarket in the neighborhood, and I just think that that's a slap in the face, and I certainly will take my responses off the air, and thank you for the dialogue, and young folks, go get them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. And you know, one of the things when you were talking about the redlining, you know, I actually forgot for a moment that it was also not just the redlining of the banks, not giving people loans to fix up their properties, or not giving people business loans to open up small businesses when it was an African American community, but also I remember that the police actually did a very effective job of describing the community as this gang-infested, horrible place to live, blah, 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 blah. And so if you lived in the community, you could not get any assistance until you know, after all this urban renewal stuff started happening. Mm-hmm. And those of us in the community watched it happen. You could see it happen. You saw the speculators coming in, buying up property. You were like, whoa, something's about to happen because this wasn't happening. Today, you fast forward, and you can drink alcohol on the street in Northeast Portland. You couldn't even get a liquor license when I first moved here. If you had an establishment in Northeast Portland, it took everything to get a liquor license. And so it is clear that the police frame what the community is. Then we bring the development agency in to actually make sure that they can buy up as much property as cheaply as possible so that they prepare for the next round of people coming in.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden people are surprised that the complexion of the community has changed. But if average rents are $2,000 a month for a one bedroom, it's not a surprise. We got lots of callers. Did you want to add something before
I just wanted
to
add on to that, Joanne. The one thing that, you know, we kind of overlook from time to time is the devastation that happened in the small business community that was running along Alberta.
Yes, yes.
That was the first time when things just came in and it was like all of the back businesses that existed along Alberta were not supported.
Yes.
So then they started, that was the first takeover.
Right.
And it went really relatively smooth because there was absolutely little to no resistance from the community overall.
Well, and do you, it's a shame because Maxine and I have been around, you know, forever, right? But do you remember when the street divide went in on Martin Luther King Boulevard? And before that divide went in, there were thriving African-American businesses up and down Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And then miraculously, PDC had this idea of beautification of the community that basically cut out parking opportunities. And so people, if you can't park to go into a business, then you're not going to go to that business. It's as simple as that. And so it did just what it was intended to do, which was to drive out the businesses so that all of a sudden you had all this land that speculators could come in and buy up.
Yeah.
Well, callers are stacked up, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, John. Welcome to KBOO. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
Hello, I'm Charles Robertson.
Hi.
And I was working with Multnomah County and kind of was working on the Healthy Retail Initiative.
Uh-huh.
I implemented that a few years ago.
Right.
And what I experienced from the, you know, the PDC and the what was that called, Trader Joe's project.
Right.
Is that they kind of threw a carrot one way to us, and we kind of went for it that way, because I think that because this Healthy Retail Initiative has been going on for a while.
Right.
You know, that's all healthy food. And so I think that it is great that the leaders, Black Leadership Group, what are they called again?
PALF, Portland African American Leadership Forum.
Yeah, I wish I could have made it that last week or a couple weeks ago to that meeting with the PDC. But you know, what was said today was that the PDC would get behind something in the future. is that with the grocery store?
Yeah, we've been hearing that for like about 30 years now.
Okay, because I'm working on a project right now that is 5 grocery store project. You know, that is for in underserved communities.
Right.
It'd be great. It'd be cool to hook up with the African advocate group.
Uh-huh.
And see if the PDC can actually stand up and do that. 5 grocery stores that are just you know, simple stores.
Right, in areas where, right.
Yeah, it'd be kind of modeled after Village Market a little bit. Have you heard of Village Market?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah, I'm one of the people that helped put that together. So something like that needs to just get in there before these stores can, you know, come in and take up other communities.
It's absolutely true. And I will say that if you want to connect with PALF, if you go to either KBOO's website or my Facebook page, I have their website listed. And so you can feel free to connect with them when this program's over.
Okay, cool.
Okay?
All right,
thank you. Yeah, and you know, the more of us working together, the better we're going to be at actually making PDC develop the city the way we want it to, because the people who are responsible clearly aren't setting the direction that PDC needs to have. So thank you so much for what you're doing and for your work.
All right, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Any comments before I go back to the phone?
Yeah, I think one of the hard things about working with PDC, and it kind of goes back to Maxine's point earlier, is that there's no way to hold them accountable.
Yes.
The structure of PDC is so that they're insulated from direct public vote or direct public anything.
Right.
They have five commissioners that sit on their board. They all have ties to the construction and development industry, so they all have a self-interest in perpetuating kind of the status quo. And the status quo controls a lot of money. I think they have $1.4 billion in lending authority yet to lend out. So the gentrification of Northeast Portland can continue, and the public really has no say. The only way we can pressure the PDC at this time is through the city council.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get on the PDC board?
That's a good question.
I think that's one thing we need to find out, because maybe one of us needs a seat on that board.
I do know that they're appointed by the mayor.
Well, and they're confirmed by city council vote. And I think it would be nice to get some community members on the PDC board, but I also think it's time for a conversation about restructuring these kind of public-private partnerships that allow the flow of public dollars originally meant for the greater good to be kind of channeled through politically connected self-interest.
Right. And so let's give people like a real-life experience. I mean, I love talking about this real-life example. So on the corner of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Fremont is a restaurant. Don't remember the name of it because it's been 20 restaurants in the last 4 years, right? But what I know to be true is that every time it opens with a PDC loan, and then it closes. Correct. And then PDC gives somebody else some money, and then they open it up for a restaurant. I remember it used to be called Belly at one point, but again, it's changed names so often, I don't even think it's like some Italian place now, right? But so as a community member who's watched this property over the last 5 years change hands at least 10 times, and each time with a sign that PDC is helping to develop this property, you've got to ask the question, who's watching PDC? Mm-hmm. And who do they answer to, right? And if they're supposedly answering to the city council's not asking the right questions, right? Back to the phone line. Hello, Dave. Welcome to K-Boot.
Hello?
Hi. Hello. Hi, Joanne. Welcome.
Oh, you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I think Martin Luther King would be, I'm going to start to cry, would be real proud of you folks. I have a feeling he would be. And also, one more thing. Did somebody say somebody was playing ukulele in the background? If they are, it reminds me of the late 1960s when I was a very poor person in Hawaii. Thanks for the program. Bye.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Joanne. It's nice when Joanne calls in and gives us kudos. Who else is on the call, on the phone? Hello, Dave. Welcome to K-Boot.
Hi, my name's Dave. Hey, thank you so much for this discussion. I wanted to ask, it sounds like, as the gentleman was saying just a minute ago about the board being so insulated, I wonder if there's kind of a coherent action plan right now. It seems like, you know, contacting the mayor's office is a good idea, city council, etc. But I always like to be part of a coherent message if I can. So I'm wondering if you all have any advice, thoughts around that.
Actually, and we are going to get into like next steps, kind of. Stephen, did you want to go there?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, we need to build public pressure on the mayor right now. And I think the message we need to have, or the conversation we need to have, is about severing these public partnerships that are so conducive to this, you know, kind of crony capitalism, where TIF funding, which is kind of the main funding for urban renewal, is coming out of property taxes that normally goes to schools, Multnomah County, the city government, and instead goes to issue debt against this development. So we're subsidizing development dollars with future development dollars. And it sounds really confusing, but basically we're putting ourselves in debt in order to give this money to Majestic Realty to build a Trader Joe's. And I think the greater conversation and the greater conversation that people are ready for is that this needs to stop. We need to stop with these economic old trickle-down economic policies that we have. And we really need to get in the right direction, where we have communities deciding, hey, this is an empty lot. Let's bring the community together, and let's figure out a way where the development commission, whatever that may be, can help us facilitate what we want, and then we can look for a partner, rather than let's look for a partner that has a project, and then community, maybe you can pressure us into giving you some jobs.
Right. And I think we need to send the message to the developers that if you're going to do business with the city and develop in Northeast Portland or anywhere else in the city, and the city council's not going to hold you accountable, then the community will. Right. And if you don't want to picket on day one of your business opening, then you got to listen to the community and make some concessions and really figure out what the community wants and focus your energy there.
And at the meeting last week with Majestic Realty, I'm so glad you said that, because it was clear to me last week that they were a little arrogant about, you know, well, you know, we don't control PDC. Well, we can talk to them, but, you know, it's like, well, and no, the land's not worth that. You know, it's like we worked out the best deal. Nobody wanted the land. I mean, they had a lot of stories that that if you were coming to a community humbled because you got this great deal that nobody else in the community could get, you would have had a different tone to your conversation. So I was a bit kind of taken aback by the sheer arrogance of the representative from Majestic Realty, as if somehow, how dare we question him? You know, was that just me, or did you guys feel that way also?
I think everybody felt that way. I wasn't in attendance at the meeting. But the other thing that I wanted to mention is each urban renewal district had had a advisory committee based on made up of community members. And about a year and a half ago, the PDC decided that they were going to disband that type of community oversight, and they came up with this larger group that was going to, instead of by neighborhoods, they were going to be just one big body that would oversee all of the development. And just for the sake of it, and I served on Interstate Urban Renewal Area Committee, I served on North McAdam Urban Renewal Area Committee, Advisory Committee. And so just for, you know, just to see how it's going to happen, I actually applied to be on that larger city committee, right, that's going to oversee the funding allocation for all urban renewal areas. And of course, I wasn't accepted. I got a letter, you know, I mean, email telling me. Yeah, and so I just said simply thank you, because I wasn't expecting to be, because when there's a voice that gets into what's actually happening in neighborhoods and is contrary to what they're planning and wanting to do, you're in the way. You cause a problem.
Someone that actually knows the community and has some idea of actually how the community feels about the development would not be the best candidate in that position, huh? Let me let the listeners know what's coming up today on The Boo. At 9, Press Watch host Teresa Mitchell has news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, professor and author Michael Clare talks about the end of peak oil. At 10 is Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an expanded investigation into Lyme disease and how the medical profession has dropped the ball in dealing with this new emerging epidemic. Also, harassment against young people working for justice for Andy Lopez. That's what's coming up today on The Boo. And in 2 short weeks, our winter, fall fun drive will start. And so if you're not a member, you can beat the rush and actually go on online at kboo.com and click the tip jar and become a member today. We're going to go back to the phone line. And then, I'm sorry, who was that? Hello, Ed. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Joanne.
Yes.
Is it Ed Washington?
Oh, hi, Ed. How are you?
All right. How are you all doing?
The hi. Ed. Good he morning. Just said Ed. He didn't say it was the Ed. Welcome.
So first, I've been listening to the show, and I'd first like to comment and acknowledge appreciation for the work that Pulse is doing. I think that you have a group of young people who some were not around when a lot of the things happened, but the fact that they are able to dig into the history of the community and develop an appreciation of what happened and what is not happening now, and not only that, but are willing to take some steps to do something about it, I think that that's a tremendous credit. And I just wanted to just share with the audience just a little bit of history that, you know, from my days of being a member of the Metro Council. And one of the things that at Metro Council, Metro has responsibility for planning, you know, on a regional basis. And when I was there, we were trying to figure out what could we do to help stimulate development and particularly help African-American businesses on, you know, African-Americans to be able to get and develop businesses along MLK. And at that time, there was, you know, that was the city and the county and everybody else had some responsibilities. But one of the things that we found in the 2040 plan was that MLK Boulevard was designated as a main street. Mm-hmm. And in the 2040 plan, there were certain things that should and could happen on Main Street. So we were able to use that. And at that time, it was the Metro Executive, Mike Burton, and the Metro Council. So we decided that we would take that approach to see if we could help. And we got the governor involved, and I think I'm sure that's all on records, and there's pictures in the papers. And Billy Reed was probably one of the first restaurants to really develop there, right on Graham, and I think it was Graham and Interstate, and MLK. And, you know, unfortunately, after that, there were just one or two African-Americans that were able to get in and got money, you know, to be able to help them, you know, get a start. Right. And I think in listening to the whole issue of about PDC, I think ultimately PDC answers, you know, to the mayor, really, on behalf of the council, but it's the whole city council. And I think that Mayor Hales has a responsibility to understand and to hear, and so does the city council, mm-hmm. about what is going on. So I would say that, and I'm sure they're doing this, is to make sure that the mayor truly understands and get a commitment, you know, from the mayor on behalf of PDC to help make a difference. Because in listening to all the comments, I think that's where, if it's a city council, the mayor is a member of the city council. And the mayor has responsibility for PDC as well as the city council. And I think that's where the conversation should, and it's the appropriate place for it to take place. And then some action should come from that, hopefully.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you calling in today, Ed Washington. And I want to thank you for your service, your public service. You've been doing the hard work for a lot of years, some in the limelight, some out of the limelight. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your
thank
call.
Thank you very much. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Yeah. You all so, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I want to take a little bit of time to talk about what's next, right? So we got this letter. I was going to say something I couldn't say on the air, but we got this letter back from PDC. To stop myself for a moment. We got this letter back from PDC. So what does PAL see as kind of the next steps in moving this agenda forward?
Well, I think Rachel and Steve and Maxine can touch on this, but I think one of the things is... Yeah, I apologize. We have a young person in the background, but
we're fine. We like babies,
and I appreciate that.
They
Thank
grow
you.
Up.
Yes, they do, and they become people just like us sitting in these chairs. That's for sure. So it starts young. But I think you know, one of the things is that outside of this Majestic Realty, Palfin made a commitment to come to the community about upstream forward thinking, you know, process on gentrification. And I think, you know, our next steps are to really pursue this in a two-pronged fashion. At the same time, I think to a certain really adjudicate the Majestic Realty deal, but then also to, in terms of really amending the past, but to prevent these types of things from ever happening again, come up with, you know, a streamlined process to, again, engage the community around gentrification policies, whether it's many of the things that were suggested today, holding the mayor accountable, really, you know, looking at the design of the appointment process to the PDC, you know, or also just looking at, you know, mechanisms around urban renewal and TIF and really kind of talking with other governments. But I think it is definitely a two-step process that has to be pursued at the same time. But, you know, the steps have been taken to really engage the community and talk about what that looks like. And so I know that, you know, others here sitting today can really express that, because I think folks on the line and, you know, who folks who have called in on the line and folks who are listening, I do believe that we've gained momentum and people have been waiting desperately for this type of opportunity. And so I know they're anxious to hear about it. So.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And so if people want to get involved, they want to help you, what do you suggest people do?
You can go to our website, www.aalfnw.org-portland, or you can email me, Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, at aalfnw.org. It sounds like the information is also on the KABU website.
Mm-hmm. And my Facebook page for Voices from the Edge. So the plan is... again, so you're still organizing to go back. Still organizing to go back in front of the city council to talk to the director of PDC. The next steps are so the next steps.
The next steps, you know, we really want to engage the community and not be too prescriptive with what we're going to do for the next steps.
Right.
But I think, as most people in my generation feel, building power to strictly appeal to the power structure that's existing. So we're not just going to keep asking Charlie Hales to do something in hopes that he does it, because we don't think that's necessarily the best way to go forward.
Right.
So we're going to pursue options that involve direct democracy, whether it be a ballot initiative, whether it be litigation. And we're going to keep building public pressure to really challenge the status quo and bring transformational change. That's what we're about. We don't want a seat at the table. We want to bring the table to everybody. So if people want to be involved with that, I definitely encourage you to contact Rachel at her email, or contact the African American Leadership Forum in some way. Come to a steering committee meeting and bring your input. And I think we're really also, you know, like Serena said, we're really trying to fight this deal and stop it from going through until we can get some community stabilization measures put in place.
Right.
But we're also trying to build a bigger vision for the future to where communities can pay the cost of development and also reap the benefits of development. Right now, we're just paying the cost.
That's absolutely true. Wonderful.
And if I could just say one thing.
Please, Maxine.
This is a movement. Mm. This is actually a movement, and it's a grassroots movement, and it's gathering momentum each and every day. And so this is just the beginning of our effort to make right the historical wrongs that the African American community has endured in this city.
Well, you know, it brings a smile to my face when I see the young people around this table, because I remember January 1st, 1990, when I moved to Portland, and I remembered being just like you guys around this table, right? Young, energetic, wanting to take on the powers that be. And so it does my heart good to see that the next generation is actually already out there putting pieces in place to make sure that the injustices that we see out here are addressed. And I just want you guys to know that personally, I appreciate it. It gives me hope, because when you get to be as old as I am, you start thinking, well, why the heck am I still doing this? And then I look at you guys and I know why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I know you guys have my back. We got a couple of callers on, so we're going to try to squeeze them in before our time is up. Hello, Robert. Can you be short, sweet, and to the point, please?
Yes. I'm wondering if we can organize a boycott against Trader Joe's. Scanner Breakfast is on Monday. PDC is always talking about all the wonderful things they do for the black community then. And finally, can we get the information of the German company and start flooding them with emails so that other communities, I'm Chicano, so that brown and white progressive people can start being a part of this fight too? I'm sure they are now, but so that we can do some more.
Wonderful. And let me ask the folks here, because I think you've raised some really good points, and thank you for that. The issue is not with Trader Joe's. I think people don't have an opinion one way or another about Trader Joe's. So, you know, it's like it could be something else, right? The issue is that you've got a plot of land that's worth almost $3 million, and PDC has given it away for $500,000, and they're going to be seeking public subsidies to help them build in an area that doesn't need public subsidies. So I don't want anybody to think that we're just mad at Trader Joe's. I mean, you want to shop at Trader Joe's, go for it. Have fun. But thank you. And they're all shaking their heads up and down. Yeah, so I do. Yeah. I am right. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Next caller. Sherry. Hello, Sherry. Welcome to KABU. Can you be short, sweet, and to the point?
Yeah, Hydra, and you actually said what I was going to encapsulate is that it's not the store, but I just think it's outrageous that anybody in the entire community would be outraged at their wanting to do this, using our tax dollars to subsidize this out-of-state development company.
Right.
I don't think it's, it might be a gentrification if you're black, but it's just an outrage to anyone, as far as I'm concerned. So,
well, thank you.
That's what I wanted to say. And I also wondered, what is the neighborhood that that's in? What is that corner? Is that Elliott or?
I believe it's King neighborhood.
It's the King neighborhood, and, yep. And are you working with them, or are they on board, or are they involved at all?
The King Neighborhood Association has had many meetings over this situation. The PDC falsely claimed that King supported this project, but they don't. They're facilitating a community engagement process, and I think you can imagine what the community is saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. And is there... And I was thinking even all kinds of progressive groups would have a lot of problem with this whole thing. So hopefully, like the Working Families Party and any even remotely progressive group in all of Portland, because I'm outraged. I want it to go to a local developer. There's no local development company in all of the Portland metro area that can be involved in this. It has to go to an out-of-state, out-of-country development company.
Thank you, ma'am. On that note, we have run out of time. I appreciate your call and your good words. Have a great day. I want to thank you all for being here in the studio today. I tell you, Portland's going to be in really, really, really good hands. It's already in good hands, but the hands are, we've got a lot of good hands out there that are doing good work. So thank you all for your work on PALF and your work with PDC to bring this issue to the public. And I want to give you an invitation to come back when there's something else to report to the public. I want you to come back and tell us what it is and how the community can help. I am Joanne Hardesty, and you have been listening to Voices from the Edge. It has been my pleasure. I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Thanks, Steve, for making us sound good. Have a great day, folks.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning. A minute before 9 o'clock. It's a Thursday and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up in the half hour at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with professor and author Michael Clare about the end of peak oil. At 10 today, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an expanded investigation into Lyme's disease and how the medical profession has dropped the ball in dealing with this new emerging epidemic. And harassment against young people working for justice for Andy Lopez. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jennifer Kemp speaks with Mitchell S. Jackson, The Residue Years. And at 11:30 on Radio Zine, host Gene Bradley interviews historian Nathaniel Philbrick about his book, Why Read Moby Dick? That's all coming up, but first on Press Watch, host Teresa Mitchell looks at 10 years since the U.S. massacre of Fallujah. And more news you're not supposed to know. That's coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 24th annual Cascades Festival of African Films, which will be held from January 31st through March 1st at the Portland Community College Cascade Campus and the Hollywood Theater. The 24th season will open with Gree Gree, a drama set in Chad, following a young man who, despite suffering from partial paralysis, becomes a renowned dancer at the local nightclub. The film will show on January 31st at 6:30 and 9 at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. Over 20 films will be screened in this year's 24th annual Cascade African Film Festival. beginning on January 31st, running through March 1st. For more information, please go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left-opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. And I'm Teresa Mitchell. Please join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Let's talk corruption for a minute. According to Russia Today, between 2000 and 2012, the U.S. government had a deal with a Mexican drug cartel, Sinaloa, that allowed the group to smuggle billions of dollars of drugs in return for information on its rival cartels, according to court documents published by El Universal. Written statements made by a Drug Enforcement Administration agent and a U.S. Department of Justice official in U.S. District Court of Chicago following the 2009 arrest of Jesus Vicente Zambada Niebla, son of a Sinaloa leader Ismael El Mayo Zambada, and the organization's alleged logistic coordinator indicate that the DEA agents met with top Sinaloa cartel officials over 50 times beginning in 2000. El Universal reports the DEA agents met with members of the cartel in Mexico to obtain information about their rivals and simultaneously built a network of informants who signed drug cooperation agreements subject to results to enable them to obtain future benefits, including cancellation of charges in the U.S. Now, just speaking for myself, just you go and traffic an ounce or two of that stuff and see if you can cut a deal that'll cancel your charges. I'll bet you can't. But, you know, smuggle billions of it. Now your business. Big business.